There was a long pause as they both held each other. The intensity of the emotion runs deep, but they both know the time has come. Throughout the eons of time, father and son had always had close communion with each other, and now that communion was soon to be broken. The Son of God is now to embark on the mission to reclaim his human sons and daughters. Both father and son understand the risks and the cost involved, but love drives them on. For a brief moment, the father and son look into the future and watch the mission unfold. The scorn, the rejection, the hatred, the spitting, the kicking, the lash, the nails all pale into nothingness compared to that one horrid moment in time when heaven and earth stand still and behold the separation of father and son. The son sees millennia of guilt, suffering, rebellion and worthlessness rolled upon him, and watches himself shake like a leaf, ripped and torn by the sense of his father's backward steps as he abandons him to the horrors of the death. The embrace tightens. How can the father give him up to this fate? At a deeper level, they both wrestle with the possibility of failure and loss to the power of sin. The Son of God would take human nature upon himself, providing a window of opportunity for his arch-rival Satan to overcome him. There were no guarantees of success. How could they plan together such madness, such risk? How could they even entertain such an absurd plan? Yet love drives them on. That long pause, which seemed like an eternity, finally ends. They both resolve to carry out the plan. The son steps to the edge of heaven, one final look into the loving face of his father, and then he is gone. In chapter 6, we looked at the long and challenging list that God would need to deal with if he was to save his sons and daughters on earth. In chapter 9, we saw the development of Satan's kingdom in the heart of man, and how Satan rules us through our sense of worthlessness. If Jesus were to break that power, he must break that sense of worthlessness. He must reconnect our sense of identity as children of God and overcome that false identity conceived in the Duracell tree. A deep sense of foreboding must have gripped the heart of Satan as he watched the angels sing the anthem of joy to the shepherds that the Messiah had come. The shining star that guided the wise men to the lowly stable would have added little comfort either. You can imagine as he gazed upon this noble infant that he knew he was in for a fight. He was unable to break that peaceful calm that rested over the child, that he had always been able to do with every previous child. It was a puzzle. The child was made of flesh and blood, but deep in the heart of this child lay some sort of peaceful confidence in the invisible hand of the infinite God. Satan knew he was in trouble. This troubled spirit rested upon the heart of Herod, and we are given a window into the turmoil that stirs the dark spirit world. The deep sense of insecurity that ruled Herod made him easy bait for Satan's shock and awe campaign against the kingdom of heaven. He would take him out before the real contest would begin, but the peaceful confidence of the infant king was not misplaced, and Providence provided a way of escape for him so that he may do battle with the ruler of darkness and in human flesh repulse his chains of insecurity that enslaved the doomed human race. The life of Jesus can be summed up in the words of John 8 verse 29. The one who sent me is with me. He has not left me alone, for I always do what pleases him. It did not matter what Satan said, he could not break that sense of dignity and confidence. Christ clung to his sonship with a tenacity that even awed the prince of darkness. Satan must have been enraged at his futile efforts to move Christ to sin. At last, someone who could resist Satan, After 4,000 years of success with every single person, Satan slams into the rock-solid wall of a human soul that is confident in his sonship to God. Sonship was the key to victory. Sonship was the surest fortification against that torrent of worthlessness that was drowning the human race. And therefore, sonship must be the focal point of the war between the two rivals. The town of Nazareth is pulsed with excitement. News of the baptizer spreads rapidly. The forerunner to the Messiah had come, and as the message reaches the lowly carpenter's shop, Jesus knew that the time for battle had come. He laid down his chisel and saw, embraces his mother, and heads towards the Jordan. Jesus is confident in his sonship, but the coming battle in the wilderness will test him like no man has been tested before. The gates of human woe will be released upon him like a bursting dam. Jesus must face the full force of human worthlessness and remain like the rock of Gibraltar. If he can stand firm, then for the first time someone will have broken the chains of the Duracell. The spoils of this victory would become the inheritance of those who would believe on him. The battle in the wilderness was foundational to the work of the cross. What use is the offer of pardon if the human soul cannot break the chains of his nothingness? What use the most powerful demonstration of love if no man, woman, or child had the power to embrace that gift? No. The worthlessness and nothingness of the Duracell must first be overcome, and the spoils of victory placed in the hands of the human race, so that all can be empowered to embrace the matchless gift of the cross. The Father knows what is coming, and he'll strengthen the hand of his Son for the battle. Not by a powerful display, not by some supernatural force or weapon, because none of these things would meet the coming foe. God offers his best weapon, the empowerment that comes from their relationship to one another. As Jesus comes up out of the water and the dove descends, the heavens open and Jesus hears audibly the voice of his Father. This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. These words are the sharpest sword that the Father could have handed to his Son to do battle. Safe in the word of his Father, he will battle the wily foe and break those chains on our behalf that we could never break. The significance of this statement goes far deeper than most would imagine. The fact that God is accepting a member of the human race offers incredible hope for the rest of us. Through Jesus, God reaches out to each one of us and tells us that we are his beloved children. If we ever hope to accept the gift of the cross, we must first hear those precious words, "You are my beloved child, in whom I am well pleased." It is impossible to accept a gift from an enemy without wondering if it is a booby trap or has strings attached. But a gift from a loving family member can be accepted for what it is, a gift, pure and simple. There is no way to approach the cross other than across the bridge of a solid belief in our sonship or daughtership to God. Any other path will lead to legalism or license to sin. Those words from heaven must have enraged Satan, a reminder of something that he was, but now is not, a son. It was a reminder of his nothingness and futility. Yet pride does not die easily, and so Satan prepares to unleash his barrage of temptations upon Jesus in the wilderness. The Bible record says that Jesus was in the desert 40 days being tempted by Satan. I think most people would find 10 minutes of constant temptation overpowering, let alone 40 days. Satan had had 4,000 years of testing practice to get it right, and you can be assured that Jesus was made the mark of every weapon of hell. Who can comprehend the depth of this conflict? The whole universe held their collective breath as Satan laid blow after blow upon the Son of God. As for us, we were fast asleep, oblivious to the heroic stand made by Jesus to set us free. If Jesus failed here, we would all have been crushed by the chains of our nothingness. Jesus was our one and only hope to pierce the darkness. You know, I get to a point like this and I just have to stop and think about him. I mean, what can I say? My heart just brims with grateful joy at the determined, unrelenting attack of this God-man upon our helpless situation. Just like a father or mother who would run through a burning house to save their child, he was mentally bashed senseless by Satan, but he would not let go. This man causes something deep inside of me to cry out, I must be worth something. Nobody would do this unless they really cared. I tell you, this love draws me in a way I find irresistible. I do resist him, but thank God he is more determined than I am. When Jesus is at his most vulnerable point, tired, hungry and lonely, all the things that would drive humanity into compromise, Satan comes to the crux of the issue. If you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread. What else would the test be except on sonship? Jesus wasn't told how long he was going to be in the desert. The record does not say that he was told in 40 days it will be all over. Jesus was still out there, and no ravens came to feed him. No manna fell from heaven. Maybe he had been mistaken about the voice from heaven. Your father would not want you to remain in this condition. Do something about it, he whispers. Satan was using the medium of appetite to try and break the faith of Jesus in his father's word. 40 days earlier, God said, This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. If Jesus turns stones into bread, then he is effectively doubting the word of God, and that doubt would be enough to confuse his identity. Beyond this, Jesus is being asked to perform something to prove his identity. Asking Jesus to turn stones into bread to prove who he is was a direct door into the kingdom of Satan, identity by performance and achievement. How many of us have not fallen for this trap of proving our worth by what we achieve? Driven to show that you have what it takes to reach the top, ignoring sleep and relaxation and most of all prayer time and Bible study, staying late at the office and missing vital family time just to get that promotion or bonus. Why do we push ourselves so hard? In many cases, I believe we are responding to that question. If you are a son or daughter of God, perform some great act to prove it. Do you find that when you wake in the morning and you want to spend some time to meditate and be with God, that your head just begins to fill up with all the things that need to be done that day? Until you can't take it anymore and you just compromise with a 5-minute prayer, and then you're off into the day. Does that happen to you? Why? If you get to the end of the day and find that you have not achieved very much, are you still content and happy? Or do you feel disappointed and a bit depressed? Do you get agitated at wasting time lying in a sick bed when you could be crossing things off your list? All of these things point to the fact that without exception all of us fall under Satan's temptations to prove our identity and worth by what we do. Due to the fact that deep down inside we carry that insecurity factor passed down to us by Adam and Eve, we are easy targets for needing to create spiritual and mental fig leaves to cover ourselves. The insecure person will always respond to a challenge to their identity, whereas a secure person will not even bother. It reminds me of a time when I was walking with a friend who had a Rottweiler. We walked past a neighbour's place that had a much smaller dog. The small dog was barking and yapping and running around trying to get the attention of the Rottweiler. The Rottweiler did not even turn its head to look at the smaller dog. I felt like the smaller dog was saying, Come on, Mr. Rottweiler, I'll take you on and prove to my owner that I can beat a big dog like you. But the Rottweiler was confident in who he was and didn't even respond to the challenge. What would add to his worth? It is for this reason that Jesus had to enter the wilderness of temptation. The human family needed a person who could demonstrate that he believed he was a child of God simply because God had said it, rather than through proving it by what he did. The world needed a David to take on the seemingly invincible Goliath of worthlessness that binds us to our sins and makes us slaves of the devil. Indeed, the story of Christ's temptation in the wilderness has many similarities to the story of David and Goliath. 1. Satan, as a spirit being, has many advantages over Jesus, who is cumbered with human nature. 2. Jesus represented the entire human race, and a victory for Christ meant freedom for us. Just as Satan represented all the forces of hell, and a victory for him meant we would ever remain the slaves of the powers of darkness. 1 Samuel 17, verse 9. Jesus was 40 days in the wilderness, facing the taunts and temptations of Satan, just as Goliath taunted Israel for 40 days. 1 Samuel 17, verse 16. Satan came in his own power, but Jesus came in the name of the Lord to destroy him who had defied the army of the living God. 1 Samuel 17, verse 45. 5. The weapons that Jesus used seemed paltry by worldly standards. He trusted in the words of God, and he used them with precision to strike the mind of Satan. The parallels are breathtaking, and I can't help but imagining myself as one of those Israelite soldiers standing on the hillside, listening to Goliath insulting my God, my religion, and myself personally. Where is your God? Why don't you fight me if you're so strong? You are weak and useless and a shame to your God. Listening to this type of abuse for 40 days would really get you down. Just look at the size of him. His armor glistens in the sunlight as his monstrous voice bellows insults across the valley. The situation seems hopeless, and there is a sinking feeling of resignation to slavery. Is it any different today? We have the taunts of Satan about our inabilities and weaknesses. His temptation seems so strong and overwhelming, and we fall to them again and again, and there is that sinking feeling of resignation to slavery. There are even those who preach that our slavery can never be vanquished, that sin will always get the better of us. Away with such thoughts. The Son of David is in our camp, and he has emancipated us from the chains of the devil. His victory in the wilderness of temptation is a victory for the entire human family. You can choose to think that you still must face Goliath, or you can watch in awe on the hillside as Jesus severs the head of your temptation. If you believe you already have the victory because of Jesus, rather than hoping he will deliver you, then you have found the very crux of faith. I'm so immensely glad that the Son of David has set me free from the power of worthlessness. He has removed the heart of my rebellion and pride. He has set my feet upon the solid rock of being identified as a child of God. He personally has faced the doubts for me and conquered them by faith in our Father's word. Sing and rejoice with me, you sons and daughters of God. Jesus has smashed the chains of the Duracell and made us accepted in the Beloved.